Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 47 with Tom Pei.
But when you go into a project, everyone has an understanding that they probably don't know, what the right answer is, right? So at Slack, we're very successful. We've done a lot of right movement. And when there was a decision to go left, we went left. When there was a decision to pick door number three, we happened to pick door number three, right? So a lot of it is by chance and luck. We recognize that. But at the same time, when we attempt a project, when we attempt to do something, I don't think anyone here ever feels that they know what the right answer is. And because of that, there's a lot of open-mindedness about being okay if this doesn't work out. Like, a lot of times we do things here and we're like, look, let's try it out. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
The top three reasons to listen to today's episode. Number one, new role. Tom holds a functional role at Slack called Sales Enablement Manager. It's a position that's only been around in the business world for about 5 years. He provides a great overview of what it's like and why it's appealing for veterans. Two, comparisons. Since his time in the military, Tom has worked at two great but very different companies, LinkedIn and Slack. He describes life at LinkedIn, where he, quote, knew what right looked like, and the advantages for veterans to go to larger companies to learn processes and best practices. Slack, on the other hand, is a high-growth startup where you make up the rules as you go. I found the comparison really interesting. Number three, hustle. About 30 minutes into our interview, Tom discusses how he researched the tech industry and got to know what was out there. He made his transition to tech by working for free on Fridays to build his resume. He also gives a gold mine of advice at about 42 minutes in about hard work and getting the opportunity you're looking for through a combination of effort and chance. It's really energizing. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find other great episodes, like episode number 23 with Tom's wife, Rayanne. You'll also find the show notes for this episode, which provides links to the websites we discuss on the show, as well as timestamps for each topic we cover, just in case you'd like to jump between segments of the interview like you jump between TV shows between a commercial break. So let's dive into my interview with Tom Pei. All right, well, joining me today from San Francisco is Tom Pei. Tom, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Thanks for having me.
So a quick background for our listeners, Tom is a sales enablement manager at Slack, one of the fastest growing startups in San Francisco, which has raised over $540 million in funding. He started out at West Point and served in the Army for over 7 years as an armor and military intelligence officer. When he left the Army, he went to Columbia Business School, after which he joined LinkedIn, first as a sales operations manager and then as a senior learning technology strategist. Also, for regular listeners to the show, he's married to fellow West Point grad Rayanne Pei, who I interviewed in episode 26. Tom, to start out, I guess for a veteran listening who may not be familiar with Slack, how would you explain what your company does?
Sure. I think I want to also call out Rayanne was an ROTC grad.
Oh, that's so, right. She wasn't at West Point. That's right.
Yeah. Gotta give her props. She'd be upset. She heard that. she's an Academy grad. No. So Slack is actually, I would say, at the essence, it is a messaging application that teams use, that companies use to communicate internally with one another. But it's kind of evolved more than that over the years. Actually, over the last 2 years, because it's only about technically a two-year-old company, 2 year plus. But now we integrate with a lot of different application platforms that a lot of folks probably use on a day-to-day basis, especially probably even in the military. So like Google Applications, different programs like Jira, Documents, Trello, Asana, a lot of business platforms that are integrated. So in essence, it allows you to communicate easily with one another within your organization, all in one place. It might not sound as revolutionary, but if for anyone that's used software at work and different type of project management tools before, it is godsend in terms of the type of tool that this helps you on a day-to-day basis.
Oh man, yeah, we've used Slack at my company Storybox for a long time now, and even you know not just when we're working remotely, but even we would be seated side by side, and you know people put their headphones on or are deep in work, and it's an easy way to message people and also kind of stay abreast of what other people are talking about, work related and non work related. And I'll put in the show notes for listeners. I'll put in a link to a video that Slack did probably 6 or 9 months ago, kind of a commercial, an animated commercial about what they do that I actually found really inspiring when you think about a very probable way that workplace will evolve with just teams being distributed around the world and being able to communicate in real time and share ideas. It is a very, very cool company. And Tom, for someone listening who might not be familiar with your role, how would you talk about what you do as an account operations manager?
Sure. So under my title, I really kind of fall under what we call sales productivity, sales enablement, sales effectiveness. There's so many different names for it, really, because this specific role and what I do is fairly new out in the civilian world. When I say new, it's really kind of taken hold probably in the last 5, maybe no more than 10 years ago. So you'd be hard pressed to find anyone who's done my type of role past that point. But essentially what the sales enablement manager does is really in essence trying to produce the right materials to the right people at the right time, specifically within the sales organization. So we do everything from helping onboard new sales reps to providing sales excellence materials, anything that we can to help them be more productive, and really just to make their lives a lot easier. This role in the past probably fell on the sales managers and management, but with the proliferation of a lot of data, a lot of tools, and just a lot of noise out there that we've seen a lot of companies nowadays craft and cut out this role that specifically is focused on sales productivity, sales enablement, and making sales reps more successful at their jobs. So it's kind of like part coaching with data, part training with information, a lot of program management, I guess, would be the another way to kind of explain it.
And what does that look like? I think it's always helpful for listeners to kind of walk through as typical a day as you would have. What does your day-to-day life look like? What time do you get into the office, and what sort of activities are you doing throughout the day?
I think it really depends. So for me specifically, it's more aligned with what our company is doing that week. So I try to get into the office fairly early-ish, early for a startup, I guess we'll say. So around 8:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, grab coffee, check my Slack messages for the day, check out the channels, and then catch up on some of the information that's been posted across the globe since we are a global company. So from there, most of my day surrounds updating information that's currently available. I want to make sure that anything new in terms of whether it's we call it presentations, decks, PowerPoint, stuff like that, new tools, implementing it at the company, how we're going to roll it out, how we're going to train our sales reps on how to use it. I'm also interacting a lot with a lot of cross-functional teams, product marketing, product. Currently, we're rolling out a certification process for a new product that we're rolling out here. So I think it just varies depending on what the focus of the sales organization and the company as a whole is looking at during that week.
And how does that translate to kind of like your lifestyle? I think that when a lot of people think of Silicon Valley and they think of exceptionally high growth startup, they might view that as like 24/7. And I'm wondering, what's the lifestyle component like? Are you working on weekends? Are you traveling a lot? Or how does that look?
It could depend. Specifically for my company, I don't travel too much. One of the benefits of using Slack is it allows us to be fairly connected and communicate fairly easily with teams that are in global location. I do know that other folks who are in my role at different companies travel a lot. They go office to office and sit down, listen in on calls, listen in on sales pitches, and try to kind of deconstruct the sales process. So which requires them to kind of be out there in the what we call, quote unquote, the front lines, using a military term there. So there's a lot of traveling involved in there in those organizations. For us specifically, not too much. Working weekends, I think, you know, it's inevitable. We're such a connected world these days that, you know, it's hard-pressed for me not to at least check my messages or emails, try to get better at my job. So whether that requires me to, you know, read about a few articles within, you know, regarding my profession. But I think it's really hard to say that you're not constantly connected in some way. Does that mean that I'm in front of my computer slaving away until, you know, midnight or 1 a.m.? Not really. And I try not to do that. I think I've done that in other roles before, but I think it really is a balance between, you know, your company, your culture, your company's culture, your management team and the team that you work with.
And I like that you pointed out earlier that, you know, the role that you're in, account operations manager, it is a relatively new role. I'm wondering, do you have a sense for what kind of a career progression would look like for someone in account operations? Do you have a sense of like what types of roles people evolve into from there?
Sure. I think account operations is kind of what we call it. Other places you might hear something like sales operations or biz ops. But I think it's still to be determined. I think if you look at folks who've kind of done this type of role for the long haul, and they started really early, they kind of roll into this role and they can either go, you know, translate and go into sales, or maybe they'll go into a kind of more of a heavy operations role. So they'll go into, say, under the finance team and maybe go up all the way up into the COO position of a company. But because it's still relatively new, it's kind of like TBD, right? I always joke around with people. I say that sales operations and, you know, sales enablement, sales productivity, it's going through its own identity crisis in a way. And it's kind of not yet well defined, really. But at the same time, everyone knows it's very critical to have at the company. It allows some of the sales folks to focus on what they do best. And at the same time, it's really evolving daily in this profession. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see it. I would probably ask me the same question 5 years from now, and there's a good chance that the career path or progression of that, what that role is going to look like, might change.
And I bet.
Yeah.
And if a veteran's listening and the type of work that you're describing sounds interesting, do you have any thoughts on indications that they might really like being an account operations manager or be well suited for it? And conversely, signs that they may not be cut out for it or may not really enjoy it?
Sure. I think one thing that, so, you know, anyone who's in what I would call kind of like the back office sales roles, right? So for those who are not familiar, you would have front office roles are more client interactions and client engagements. And these are, I would consider, categorized as maybe more of a back office. So the people that are kind of running things on, but they're really not in front of the customers as much. I think that is in itself is probably an indicator. So if you're more of someone that kind of hunkers down, loves to do the work and kind of focus in on what you're doing at the moment and, you know, really, I would say someone who's in that type of kind of mindset would be probably really well suited, or at least would be comfortable with this. You know, you don't get a lot of fanfare. You don't get the credit if a large deal comes across and it closes. Everyone appreciates what you're doing, but it's not something where, you know, you're whining and dining or meeting out and traveling and meeting with customers. That's not the role that anyone in an operations role like this would want to do. Now, I would say a couple of things that if someone wants to get into this type of role, number one, be very, very attuned to the different types of sales type of products that sales reps use. Essentially, I work and help out the sales organization. So, kind of think of me as the intel officer providing information to the ground soldiers on the ground, telling them exactly what they should be looking for, what they should be doing, and, you know, how things are going on the battlefield. And also kind of like the operations officer or the operations NCO that's responsible for making sure, you know, movements are going forward, making sure people are at the right place. You know, it's a kind of that combination. So if you have done some type of staff work, if that's something that you actually enjoy, this might fit you well. And I think obviously one big thing too is that you have to be very comfortable with understanding and using a lot of data in your role. I look at reports, I look at spreadsheets, I look at scores, I look at activities, and I try to do my best to try to take those numbers, crunch them up, and try to interpret them best my ability to provide some type of recommendation. So it kind of sounds like an intel officer or, you know, someone who's worked in intelligence. That might be well suited for them as well.
That's great. And I want to step in a second to kind of walk through how you got to Slack. But one thing in particular I wanted to jump to right away was you went from LinkedIn to Slack, and both are incredibly, they have incredible reputations as just very high quality organizations with really high quality teams. I'm wondering, what was it like though, going from a company that's very established, that's much larger, and then jumping into a high growth startup like Slack? What were the biggest differences that you noticed between those two environments?
Sure. So first of all, I really appreciate my time at LinkedIn. I enjoyed it. I learned a ton. But with that said, I think at companies as large as LinkedIn and other similar companies with, you know, close to 8 to 10,000 people, it moves fairly slow, right? If you are trying to get information, it seems like you're moving through a maze of different organizations, different departments, different people to get a, you know, clear answer. Whereas startups like Slack, the execution, you know, to the idea of the execution, the speed between that is extremely, extremely fast and quick. And I think everyone here is also more of kind of all hands on deck. So it's not, you know, what I've appreciated or I've seen at least here at startups like Slack is, you know, this concept of, you know, it may not be my specific job, or it may not be what I was hired to do, but I'm going to roll up my sleeves and do it, because at the end of the day, we're all aligned towards single goal, single mission. And I'll say there's a lot of people like that at larger companies too. And I think some big ones like, you know, like LinkedIn, like Google, like Facebook, where there's really strong collaboration culture, you're going to see that more. But in general, I would say you often see that probably here, like at Slack or other startups, more often than not.
You know, and as you say that, and I'm just going to recognize at the outset that I'm obviously biased here, being in startups and really, really enjoying startups, but how well suited most veterans are for what you described of just being in a spot where you're filling in wherever you're needed, you're swapping roles, you're doing whatever's necessary to help the organization succeed. And maybe it's more difficult for a veteran to directly break into like an early stage startup, but it seems like, you know, based on what you just described, it seems like something where they'd be really well suited if they can get their foot in the door of the organization.
I think so. And, you know, one of the things that I also recognize too is I think there's this kind of mentality of, hey, you know, we have a group of several hundred folks, or maybe 10, maybe even less than that. But when you go into a project, everyone has an understanding that they probably don't know, you know, what the right answer is, right? So here at Slack, you know, we're very successful. We've done a lot of right movement. You know, when there was a decision to go left, we went left. When there's a decision to pick door number three, we happen to pick door number three, right? So a lot of it is by chance and luck. We recognize that. But at the same time, when we attempt a project, when we attempt to do something, I don't think anyone here ever feels that they know what the right answer is. And because of that, there's a lot of open-mindedness about being, you know, being okay if this doesn't work out. Like, a lot of times we do things here and we're like, look, let's try it out. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Now, startups and Slack, we have the luxury of starting over and resetting, right? Whereas larger companies, they might not have that luxury. You know, they're a public company. They have shareholders to answer to, right? They have to make a profit. They're constantly under the microscope every quarter. So they might not have the luxury to just, you know, do a small failure here and there. And that failure might be really expensive and really time consuming. And it might be something that an entire, you know, team of folks are specifically dedicated towards. Whereas as a startup or at Slack, you know, it's part of the job. It's not the end goal.
That's great. That's great. Well, let's rewind the clock back to when you were in the Army on active duty. How did you, or at what point did you know you were going to leave the Army, and how did you approach that decision?
You know, it's interesting because I think when I look back on it, part of the reason why I left, or at least a big reason why I left, was I had what people call here FOMO. Which is the fear of missing out, right? And I first heard that term when I was in business school, but and when I look back on it, I realized I had that as well. So, you know, I hit my 5-year mark. I wanted to stay a little bit longer. I had a deployment that my unit was going on, so I wanted to stay for that. It just felt right at the time. But at a certain point, I realized that I would probably be that type of person that's always curious, always wanted to know what was out there. And, you know, for me, I wouldn't be comfortable just kind of passing that by. I knew that would hit a point where I would say, you know, I wonder what I would have accomplished, what I would have done had I got out and I did something different than the military. Right. So for me, it's, you know, but what I saw, I've seen a lot of my peers doing the transition fairly successfully, going to business school, going into some great companies and doing amazing things. It motivated me to think about something beyond the military. And I think that was one of the big reasons why I decided, you know what, I won't be comfortable, you know, 20, 30 years down the line thinking about what would have happened had I not gone out.
And as you look back on that transition, especially those first couple of years, what did you not know to expect about civilian life, or what came as a surprise to you during your first couple of years of that transition to life as a civilian?
So my first couple of years, I transitioned directly into business school, which is, I think, is a very different transition, right? For me, I had the luxury of having two additional years to try to figure things out, more or less. So I think one of the big things, and, you know, that I realized when I talked about getting out of the military, you know, with people in the military, with leaders that I respected, you know, they kind of painted this bleak picture of, like, everyone's out for themselves, you know, everyone, you know, focus on the money in their pockets and how they could benefit, which I would say there's probably more of that than in the military organizations out there, right? More than in the military itself. But I was pleasantly surprised how, you know, a lot of folks in the civilian world are, you know, very nice, decent people, right? They want you to succeed. They have the same dreams and aspirations as anyone else, right? Both in the military and out. So it wasn't as bleak as I thought it'd be. Maybe it's because at the time when I was thinking about getting out, right during the recession, and we had all these bad corporate governance occurring in financial institutions, and I just think that people kind of sensationalized how bad corporate greed in America was going to be. So that was actually kind of surprising in a good way for me. And it allowed me to kind of be open about it with other folks, individuals.
I love that. It's better to be surprised in that way, right? Better to go in with low expectations and have the goodness of people surprise you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I literally, you know, it's funny, like you would meet at business school, I would meet folks who were in banking and went to some, you know, very, very reputable banks out there. And like, to me, I was imagining I'm going to see Gordon Gekko from Wall Street, right? Slick back hair and just like snoozers. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they cared about a lot of the same things I cared about. They had the same values that I had. And it was a great relief. At the same time, you know, kind of misconstrued some of the perceptions that I've had going in, right? which was great.
And one of the things I appreciated in speaking with your wife, Rayanne, was, you know, you guys had different paths. You exited at a very similar time. You went to business school, she didn't. And she talked about the ways in which she kind of benefited from your business school experience, but without having to actually go through that. But I'm wondering, mm-hmm. you know, given that you went through it, do you have any advice for people on how to evaluate whether or not to go to business school, especially if someone's not in that position sure. where their significant other might be going through? Like, how might they think through whether it's worth it or not for them?
Yeah, I mean, I believe I'm pretty biased about it, right? Everyone's going to be fairly biased about the decisions and choices they make. Maybe it's self-rationalization in one way, right? You spend a lot of money going to business school. You want to make sure that and convince yourself that you made the right decision. So for me, based off how things have worked out, I'm always going to be very bullish and recommend business school. But I think it also makes sense depending on what you want, you know, if you're trying to figure things out. I will say that I knew I wanted to get out of the Army, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I knew I had to get some time to think about it, to really, you know, do my due diligence, look and talk and try out different things. For my wife at the time, it was kind of unexpected in a sense because, you know, if anyone who's applied to business school knows, it's a long process. It's not something you just complete in a day or two. So I mentally prepared myself, studying for the GMATs, getting my recommendations ready, writing the essays, and I prepared myself for that. Just to see how things would work out. And if it didn't, then it didn't. I think Rayanne, for her, you know, she didn't think about business school as the option at the time that she was in while she was in command at Fort Campbell. So for her, you know, her main focus was to do her job to the utmost ability and focus on that because she had significant more responsibility than I did while we were both in. And so for her, she didn't have the luxury of just kind of like, okay, I'm just going to, since you got into business school, I'm going to apply to business school at the same time. And I think what happened really is a great benefit. One, you know, she definitely became the sugar mama. She supported me while I was at business school. And at the same time, I gained a lot of valuable lessons in kind of the way that she approached work, the way that she approached relationships. At her job, the way that she networked, you know, we kind of fed off each other in that sense. So I think it was partly timing, partly, you know, financially, you know, what made sense at that point. And I think combining those two together, you know, made her decide that, you know, I'll go ahead and work while you learn and, you know, do the business school route. And then, you know, we're obviously still thinking about, you know, maybe when it's her time to go back to school, and then, you know, I return the favor.
The life of a kept man. I love it. You were partying it up in business school. Your wife is slaving away and paying the bills. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So coming out of business school, how did you find your way to LinkedIn? Did you know?
I grew up in this California area. I saw Silicon Valley and the rise and grow and the pop, but then also at the same time, you know, when I started business school, it became kind of started getting hot again. And I knew that if I wanted to do something that was innovative, fast, fun, right, great culture that you constantly hear about, tech was a way to go. So I started actually first by just trying to understand what the hell people are talking about. And my number one goal was, can I hang in a conversation when anyone talks about tech? So I started, and I actually went on Facebook, and I started liking a lot of different tech publications out there. So Recode, VentureBeat, even TechCrunch, even though I have my own opinions about TechCrunch and their articles. But, you know, I started clicking on them and started surfacing more content that could get fed to me so I could start reading stuff. And at first, I actually didn't know a single thing they were talking about. But the more you read, the more you listen to it, and, you know, I picked the Wall Street Journal. I always looked at the tech section, tech and marketing section. The more I read about it, the more interesting it got, and the more I started realizing, kind of bucketing things out and seeing, okay, this is consumer internet. This is software. This is hardware, right? This is a new trend. And then I saw several courses. Since I was in New York City, there was a lot of these, they're like accelerators / short-term courses that they offer to get you kind of spun up on tech or just general topics in tech. One that was really great that I always went to is called General Assembly. They offer these very short form courses, about 1.5 hours, 2 hours on a specific topic at night, so after school. So I started attending them, and I started to build my knowledge about the tech industry in general. And then they offered it was like a networking night / hiring fair down in Chelsea Market. And I thought, you know what? I have nothing to lose. I'm a first-year MBA. Let's see what happens. And I literally went down there, printed out my resume, and just started handing it to folks, saying, hey, I'm a Columbia MBA. I have Fridays off. I'll work for free. I just want to learn. I just want to do whatever I can just to kind of learn. I'll follow the CEO if I have to, you know, shadow that person. And guess what? I'm free. I'm a free intern, which I think is illegal in New York. I think they have to at least give you like a subway pass or something like that to make it kosher. But, and then just then, and there's, you know, by the grace of God, there's the three, entrepreneurs, all who came from very respectable MBA programs. They looked at my resume and they kind of understood what I was doing. They're like, okay, this guy is trying to do a transition into tech, but he doesn't have a tech background. Got it. We were all there before. We were MBA students. We know what you want. We got it. So they're like, how about this? Come to our startup, you know, just come on Fridays. We'll put you in a sales operations role. And you're going to just follow our sales operations person. And that's exactly what I did. And now I had on my resume, that was a sales operations, you know, associate or intern, which allowed me to then, when a internship opportunity came up for MBA interns, there was one from LinkedIn that was specifically for sales operations. And I might have been maybe one of five MBA candidates from the target schools that LinkedIn were looking at that actually had sales operation on the resume. And I got picked up right there and, you know, to the internship for out here in Mountain View. And, you know, the rest is history. That's kind of how my path played out.
There's so much I love about that, and I really appreciate the specificity. And for listeners at beyondtheuniform.io, I'll put show notes. In the show notes, I'll link to all the different publications and programs that Tom just mentioned. But I just love the way in which you were so proactive in becoming conversant about the different industries and what you may enjoy or not enjoy, and then taking that approach, which I highly recommend, and I love that you did that, of volunteering to work for free and really hustling on those Fridays off rather than skiing, rather than, you know, just taking it easier, boozing, which is a common business school pastime of mine. You got in there and you found opportunities, you made opportunities, and it's cool to see that that seems to have made the difference, and it stood out when you're competing against people with similar backgrounds, at least on the business side, that you have that practical experience. And I'm wondering, because, you know, because you kind of have continued on that operations focus, was it more of a decision that you wanted to work at LinkedIn, or was it the role specifically that you were going after, or was it a combination of both of those?
I think it's a combination of both. I will say that sales operation became very interesting as I started getting into it, you know, on those Fridays as much as I could. I started getting to understand how to do Excel. Understand looking at data drove decisions. And then LinkedIn in general was a very attractive company to me. You know, for one, I wasn't actually necessarily looking at startups. For me, I kind of had this mentality that, well, I should go to a bigger company, one, for similar pay parity. At the same time, I also wanted to make sure that, I wanted to go to a company that I figured might already kind of have all the things written out, right? They knew what right looked like. They made a lot of iterations, and the reason why they're as big and growing and successful is because they've done the right thing. So I wanted to ensure that I go to a larger company just to understand the process. So I think it's a combination of both. And then LinkedIn's mission was great too. You know, it's this concept and idea of connecting the world's economy and connecting everyone together so that everyone has an economic opportunity. You know, that really resonated with me. It was kind of like the closest thing from the civilian viewpoint of the mission that we had in the military of doing something that was kind of greater than ourselves.
That's great. And I love that great soundbite you had about LinkedIn, that they knew what right looked like. And I do think that for veterans, I think for probably everyone, but for veterans in particular, there is such an advantage to go to a company that's known for being the best. And, you know, I imagine LinkedIn had, like you said, a great training program, and they had the cutting edge way of doing things. And so when you're there, you're just drinking from a fire hose, but just learning the best possible way to do something. And I imagine that's not quite as true for a company like Slack. Maybe it's true for Slack, but most companies like Slack, you're kind of inventing as you go. You're kind of building so rapidly that they might not be able to train you in the way that you would be trained at an organization like LinkedIn that's had more time to get established.
Yeah, and then there are obviously a lot of startups out there too that just, they get it, right? They know how to do it. And I want to claim that we have all the right answers. We definitely don't here at Slack, but it's always mindful to kind of think about, as you choose a company, think about who are the people that are there, what type of backgrounds do people have. Go on LinkedIn, right? Like, find out the type of folks that are there, and I'll give you a good mindset of how they probably do their work and how they probably approach problems.
And one thing I was curious about with your background is there's that question of when to move on. And, you know, one theme that's come up in a lot of these interviews is that veterans will approach their first job as the end all be all, and rather, you know, you end up moving around a lot and you learn and you kind of change your taste and you progress. So I'm wondering, you were there just shy of 2 years at LinkedIn. How did you know it was time to move on, and how did you decide to make that transition to Slack?
Yeah, I think it really came down to the opportunity that was available. I had a friend who knew someone else that worked at Slack. They talked about, you know, the great culture they had, what they were doing, and the fact that companies like Slack, there's not that many that come around every year like this. And there was this role that actually was very similar to what I was doing at LinkedIn. And it allowed me to kind of think and pause for a moment, you know, should I jump on this rocket ship and see where it goes, right? Especially because this window may close and it might be a long time, or it might just be a bad time for me to make another transition shift. So for me, I thought, you know, I learned as much as I could at that role that I was in with LinkedIn. And for me, this was an opportunity to kind of jump on that rocket ship. And, you know, in Silicon Valley, there's this mantra of you find that rocket ship that goes off, hold on tight and see where it goes. Don't be too picky with necessarily the role that you have or the title you have, because having that, you know, having that brand on your resume, having the ability to be a part of a company that's, you know, moving up towards the right very fast is something that you'll never be able to get or that won't be as common as you think. So for me, I was like, all right, well, now or never to jump on this. So and I made the leap.
That's great. I mean, it's so funny you use that same word rocket ship, because literally in the last 12 months that when I talk to friends who are, you know, military and non-military who are moving to the Bay Area and looking for a company, I'm like, look, there are a handful of rocket ships and Slack is definitely one of the ones I always mention. It is. And I think that's, you know, I think both financially and experience wise, you're totally right. Like the ability to just hold on to a rocket ship, no matter what the capacity, just get in there and you will be better off in a variety of ways. Well, I'm conscious of the time here, and I always like to end with more of an open-ended question. And you've covered a lot around advice with business school and with Slack and LinkedIn. I'm just wondering, what have we not talked about that you would want listeners on active duty or who are veterans, what would you want to share with them? It could be personal life, professional life, but sure. Yeah, what else would you want to share?
I think, you know, I've taken a lot of calls from vets who are interested in business school, who are also interested in moving into tech, who are interested in the companies I worked at. And I think the theme that I've kind of given them is more or less, you know, try not to target try not to say, all right, it's just this company or just this school or just this role or nothing. I think for a lot of vets who are transitioning out, most of them are fairly young. They might still be less experienced than their peers in the civilian world, right? But they have a lot of time on their hands. They still have the ability to make progress and move up the ranks. And I think, you know, a lot of times people just want to go like, it's Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, or nothing. Or it's, you know, it's Harvard Business School or nothing. Or it's like, I want to be a business development or business, you know, corporate development or investment banking or nothing. And I think that really limits your ability, because who knows, right? Who knows whether you're going to like that role or that job or that company, no matter what other people say. And I think another thing too is using kind of like a baseball analogy is like, try to get as many at-bats as possible. I think a lot of people will just assume, number one, when they apply for a job that, you know, they're going to, you know, they know someone, they're just submitted and they're just kind of going to wait and see how it goes. You know, when you apply for a job, you should be applying for a lot of them. When you look at schools or look at different opportunities, like try to have an open mind about what's out there. And I think finally, the last thing too is, you know, I wholeheartedly believe that a lot of my success is due to luck. I'll be honest, like it's due to chance and luck. I was at the right time, the right place. I bumped into, you know, I went down to Chelsea Market that day instead of, you know, sleeping in to go meet someone, to go to a hiring fair, right? I heard about a certain company at a party that allowed me to research it to get me really involved in trying to look out and seek someone that's from that area or that company. You know, don't limit yourself. Don't assume that you're going to just like, you know, do everything behind the computer. Go out there. Get those at-bat opportunities. Go out and like go to networking events. Meet people for coffee. You know, go to mixers, go to open houses. You have no idea who you're going to meet that's going to set you up for that potential role, or they're going to introduce you to that potential person that might get you that opportunity you're looking for. And it's all by chance. It's all making sure, you know, hey, you made a left when you're supposed to make a left. You picked door number one when you're supposed to pick door number one. And it was luck and chance.
Well, I'm reminded as you say all of that quote that I really, really love, which is the harder I work, the luckier I am. And I don't dispute the extreme role that serendipity's played in your story and everyone's story. And I think that dovetails really well into your first point about getting as many at-bats as possible. And I think you've been an example of someone who, you know, from your story, you have continuously put yourself out there and just really taken risks and gotten out of your comfort zone. And from that luck materialized. But like you said, had you not gotten up and gone to Chelsea Market, you would have never had that fortuitous moment that changed your trajectory. And so I love to keep in mind the role that luck plays, but I also want to, you know, to underscore that in your own story, how you were, you know, you've really exemplified that getting up and really going after it. And I think that puts you more in more situations where luck can come along and give you that tilt in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's a better way to say it is, you know, try to have those opportunities where luck's going to work on your side, right? So, you know, don't just assume, sit back and say, okay, I'm just going to let luck kind of play in or chance play in. But like, hey, set yourself up for those opportunities. Go out there. You know, go to those events, check that out, you know, and don't feel as if you're not getting any value out of it because you have no idea who you're going to meet or what you'll learn that might set you up for success later on.
This was great, Tom. Well, I appreciate, I appreciate all the advice that you've shared and the perspective. And I also just appreciate your example as a role model for other veterans, someone who has really worked hard and through that and the combination of a little bit of luck, gotten to work at two incredible organizations. So thank you for taking the time to speak with me and with the Beyond the Uniform audience.
Thank you, Justin. This is awesome. And I hope more vets or listen to this podcast and take the advice that others have provided. Thanks so much for doing this.
Surface, surface, surface.
Thanks for listening. Before you go, three important announcements. First, if you believe in what I'm doing and believe in supporting veterans in their careers, please, please, please help me spread the word. The best way I know to do that right now is by taking 18 seconds to write a review on iTunes. It would mean a lot. Second, based on my interviews, I'd advise any and all veterans to look at servicetoschool.org and the American Corporate Partners. Both are completely free for veterans and give you a lot of great resources for your education or professional life, respectively. Third, there are a ton of other great interviews, resources, and data at beyondtheuniform.io. Check it out, share it with your friends, and drop me a line if you have any feedback because I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, and see you on the next interview.